Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want when you want with access to over 2,400 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/know-how. That's LYNDA.com/know-how. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code know-how. On this episode of Know-How, making rocket fuel out of sunlight, we answer your questions about building a computer, gyro-stabilized platforms, and stream your Steam. Welcome to Know How. It's the Twit show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballos here.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next, actually, I keep saying 30 minutes. That's never 30 minutes. For the next hour, we're going to take you through some of the projects that we've been working on so that maybe you can geek out in your real life.
Don't worry about the time. Just sit back, relax, and learn.
And learn. Open up your learn holes. We're going to be dumping a lot of stuff in there. Now, Brian, you know how, you know, like, we need sunlight?
Yeah. Sunlight's good, right? That's how I got this sweet tan that I have.
That's how I got this sweet sunburn. Well, you know, sunlight's not just for tanning. It's not just for sunburning. Did you know that you can actually make fuel out of sun?
Well, I mean, I understand the concept of solar power.
Yeah,
I mean, but photosynthesis.
When we think of solar power, we normally think of like plants turning light energy into, you know, through photosynthesis into energy they can consume, or we think of stuff like this, right? Solar.
Yeah, that's the first thing I think.
Right,
of.
Direct conversion of sunlight into electricity.
Right,
it's useful and it's kind of cool, but there's actually a new effort to turn sunlight directly into a different type of fuel, specifically into hydrogen. Now, check this out. The EU has funded a project that is attempting to use concentrated sunlight and turn water and carbon dioxide into jet fuel.
That's kind of the dream, right?
Yeah.
To be able to turn water into just fuel?
Just water fuel. And you know, all the ingredients are there. We know that hydrogen is energy-packed. If there was a way to get pure hydrogen out of the molecules that it's attached to.
The separating part is difficult.
Pain in the butt. No. Typically, when we want to get hydrogen out of water, we would electrolyze it. You'd run a positive and a negative electrode into water. You get hydrogen bubbling off of one side. You get oxygen bubbling off the other side.
Okay.
You have to collect it. It's very energy intensive. It's kind of a pain in the butt. It's not all that efficient. The EU has figured a way around it with a project they're calling Solar Jet.
That's pretty clever. Okay.
Yeah. Now, the question is, how does it work, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So imagine this. You have a pressure vessel, and in that pressure vessel, you've got all this light that's been collected with solar collectors, which is a fancy way of saying mirrors.
Okay.
So they're all focusing light into this pressure vessel, which has a way of getting the light into the pressure vessel.
Okay.
Well, physics 101, whenever you focus a lot of radiative energy, light energy, into an enclosed space, you're going to raise the temperature. When you raise the temperature, you're also going to raise the pressure. So now you've got a vessel that's incredibly hot and incredibly dense, very pressurized, right?
Okay, yeah, there's a lot of forces at work there.
A lot of forces at work, and physics as we know it doesn't work quite the same. So what they do is they take advantage of that to pump carbon dioxide, so that's CO2, and water vapor, which is H2O, into the pressure vessel. At those temperatures, at that pressure, it actually cracks the molecules. And what ends up happening is you break the O2 away from carbon dioxide. You break the H2 away from H2O, and instead you now get carbon monoxide, you get a molecule of O2, and you get a molecule of H2. So for every molecule of H2O and CO2, you get one molecule of pure hydrogen, one molecule of pure oxygen and one molecule of carbon monoxide.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's splitting them into little individual parts.
It just splits them up, and then they naturally form back into those molecules. The cool thing is you can pump away the hydrogen, and now you have pure hydrogen that you could turn into methanol. You could turn it into basically anything. In fact, this right here, this is a device that I got at CES last year. Mm-hmm. The whole idea is it uses a sodium silicate cartridge to contain hydrogen. It's very dense with hydrogen.
Okay.
When you add water to the sodium silicate, you get heat and hydrogen. Hydrogen just bubbles out.
Okay.
And then it goes into this. This is a magical, magical device.
What is this?
That's actually a fuel cell. That's a hydrogen fuel cell.
And the only byproduct is water.
Water, right. Yeah. Water and heat. So the way it works is if you pump hydrogen into that little inlet there, you're going to run it through what's called a PEM, is a proton exchange membrane, and you get water and a small electrical charge. Well, you have a lot of those membranes, and this will actually charge an internal battery, which in turn can charge a 5-volt device.
Yeah, I see that there's a little USB thing there. Wow.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So that's super cool.
Exactly. So if we have a process that can turn light, take light and turn carbon dioxide and H2O into a hydrogen fuel source,
right,
we can now run it through a hydrogen fuel cell.
Right. I mean, I remember a few years ago, Honda made a hydrogen fuel cell powered car, mm-hmm. and the only byproduct was water, but the hard part was getting the hydrogen for the fuel cells.
Right, because piping hydrogen around the world, it's dangerous.
I remember they used to put it in blimps, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I can't remember. No, not striking any.
They didn't call them solar blimps, though,
no,
did they?
They didn't.
Okay.
No. But the other use of this is you can actually take that H2 and you can make oxygen rocket fuel. You can make rocket fuel, which is it's like four hydrogens on top of a carbon atom. I can't remember the formula.
But that's powerful stuff.
But it's powerful stuff. Yeah. But you could take this process and you could directly use it to create rocket fuel.
Wow. And that's pretty cool.
That's
using the sun and basic water to make fuel.
Out of nothing at all. Much more efficient than solar cells and much more flexible, too.
Well, and then there's also the NIF or whatever, the lab where they use the lasers.
Yeah,
They focus the lasers to make fusion.
Well, that's different.
What
they're doing is they're fusing atoms together. So versus nuclear power as we know it today is all about fission. It's taking typically an atom of uranium-235 mm-hmm. and putting it in close proximity to another one, shooting a neutron at it, splitting it apart, creating two more neutrons, which can then hit other uranium-235 atoms and creating a chain reaction that creates heat.
Right.
Fusion, you're actually taking elements and you're slamming them together, making heavier elements.
And I think they've had a few successful tests, but this is cool, like using the sun to do this. Okay.
Yeah, cool. It's all about energy. It's all about energy. We love energy.
Anything to reduce our carbon footprint and hopefully reverse global warming, but that's probably not really going to happen.
I just want rocket fuel.
Yeah, right. Well, if we can make enough rocket fuel, we can.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I want to go. Now, folks, we're here on Know How because we know that you like to learn. We know that you are the smart folks that like to get online and find out things that you haven't known about before. And thankfully, one of the sponsors of Know How is Lynda. Now, lynda.com is the source for online knowledge. It's what we use here at TWIT whenever we need to brush up on a subject. Now, I did say brush up, because Lynda is not just about learning new things. Lynda is a great resource for if you need to relearn something that you have forgotten. Now, lynda.com is known as the leader in online education because, well, that's what they do. That's what they've dedicated themselves to do. Lynda.com helps you keep up to date with software, learn brand new skills, and explore new hobbies with easy-to-follow video tutorials. Whether you want to make the most out of your camera gear, learn the latest version of Photoshop, or edit your own video footage using Final Cut Pro, lynda.com offers thousands of topics in a variety of courses. At lynda.com, watch and learn how to attach a GoPro to a quadcopter, something I think you'd be interested in.
Yeah,
in their weekly series called DSLR Video Tips. You can turn your laptop into a live performance instrument and learn to play backing tracks, process vocals, and loop sounds with MainStage. Their new releases include 3D printing with Photoshop, where you can learn how to prepare and print your 3D models with Photoshop, and up and running with Square Register, where you can learn how to start taking payments anywhere with the Square Register service. The payment processing solution that's perfect for small businesses. Now, personally, I've been into Final Cut Pro. It's sort of been my thing recently. I know a lot of you have had to learn Premiere. That's the editor I've been using. So I figured it's only fair that I start taking a look at Final Cut.
I like to suffer.
Well, no, I played with it a while back. It's a good nonlinear editor. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my thing.
Cup of tea. But
not
that's the beauty of Lynda. You can learn new things or see if you like them or not.
Exactly. And the nice thing about Lynda is that it allowed me to skip back and forth. You know, it's not one of these things where, okay, here's a video, watch the video. Mm-hmm. There's chapters. There's transcripts. They tell you exactly where you can find things. So, for example, if I'm trying to learn Final Cut Pro and I'm thinking, well, I know how I do this in Adobe Premiere. I know how I do color correction. Where do I do color correction in Final Cut Pro? I don't have to scan through everything to find, like, look at the screen. Is he doing color correction? Is he?
Right.
No. Instead, I just go to the transcript. I say, locate color correction.
And it will skip to the, maybe it's even in the middle of the video and you can skip straight
and
to it.
Actually, there's even a chapter about color correction. This is what Lynda's all about. This is what they're good at, giving you the knowledge you need when you need it. Now, Lynda offers courses for all experience levels, beginner, intermediate, and advanced, and their instructors are accomplished professionals at the top of their fields, passionate about the teaching. Lynda.com works with software companies to provide you updated training the same day new versions hit the market, so you'll always have the very latest skills. With over 2,400 courses and more added each week, Lynda.com courses are produced at the highest quality, not like the homemade videos on YouTube, which we love. But sometimes you want good audio. Sometimes you want good lighting. Sometimes you want good camera work. It just takes all those elements out of the equation when you're trying to learn something new.
Sometimes you just want to be able to find part two.
Exactly. Sometimes you just want to be able to skip ahead. That's what Lynda.com lets you do. Whether you have 15 minutes or 15 hours, each course is structured so that you can learn from start to finish. Lynda.com also offers certificates of completion when you finish a course, which means you can publish your LinkedIn profile with these certificates, which is great if you're a professional in that field. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to try Lynda. Learn something new with Lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire Lynda.com course library, or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's projects using the exact same assets. And you can try Lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to access the entire library. That's over 2,400 courses free for 7 days. It's all at lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank Lynda for their support of Know How.
Speaking of streaming things to multiple devices, what if I told you there's a way to do it with your gaming PC?
Impossible.
On a Mac? Could you stream stuff to your Mac?
No. Speaking witchcraft now.
You're such a doubter.
I know. No, okay. This is something that has been going on for a while, right?
Yes.
Remember there was a service not too long ago that offered this idea of it would...
On live.
Yeah. Right. Where you didn't need a high-spec computer because essentially all your computer was doing was receiving a streaming video and all the processing was done at a server far, far away.
It was a pipe dream.
Ultimately, it folded. It died. Yeah, there was a lot of latency issues. There were a lot of performance issues. But are you telling me that maybe we're ready for another go?
We're getting closer. Yes, it's still in beta, but there's something called Steam Streaming that came out fairly recently. And what this allows you to do is use your powerful gaming PC that you might have in the home and send it to a different device. So, for example, I was playing my PC games on my MacBook Air, which, unfortunately, you know, some of the games you can't play on Macs, but I was playing Titanfall. It doesn't even have to be a Steam game. It can be any game that you have in your Steam library on your list. So it's pretty simple, and I made a video to show you how to do it.
Well, how about this, Brian? Why don't you go ahead and blow my mind?
So the first step to start streaming using Steam is to have it installed on your gaming PC, which is the host, and then have it also installed on your client, and which in my case is my MacBook Air. In the Steam preferences under account, you'll see a box where it says beta participation. Click the change button and you'll be prompted to be able to change from not using the beta to Steam beta update. Once you check that and update Steam, you should see a new tab saying in-home streaming. Click that, and if you are in the same network as your host machine, it should pop up right away, and this is named gamers because Padre did that, and that's our gaming PC. So now we're connected, and if you look at my games list, it's not just the games that are installed on my Mac, but also the games that are installed on the gaming PC. So unfortunately, Goat Simulator is not a Mac game, but since I'm streaming from the gaming PC, I'll be able to play on my MacBook Air. So I hit the stream button, and you can see it loads up just like it would if I was playing it on my PC. And down in the bottom left-hand corner, you can see the resolution it's set at, which I have it set to automatic. And I let Steam decide, so it's 1280 by 720, and I'm getting a solid 60 frames per second. This is over the Twit's guest Wi-Fi also. I don't have it hardwired, which would be the optimum way to do this. But you can see the game runs perfectly smooth, and there's no noticeable input lag from the controls. Now, that was a single-player game, but what if I tried playing a multiplayer game? I'd like to point out that I am doing this over Wi-Fi, so it's not optimal. But now that Game of Thrones is over, I was playing a game to get my fix called Chivalry, which is a first-person medieval war game, and there was some lag, but it was definitely playable. And when I tried playing a FPS at home, it worked fine. I think just because we have a lot of RF interference at Twit that I was getting a little bit of lag. But here you can see the desktop of my PC and the screen on my MacBook Air, and it's mirrored perfectly, even though we're going from over Wi-Fi. So now you're streaming to the client device that you want, but what if you have a Mac and you want to use an Xbox controller to play in your living room? Fortunately, there's an option from Tataboogle to download Xbox 360 drivers that will allow you to use your Xbox controller that you use for your PC on your Mac. Navigate to the website, download the latest drivers, and once you install those and restart your Mac, you can go into System Preferences and there'll be an Xbox controller configuration, which should already be mapped perfectly with the controller using the triggers, the buttons, and the joysticks. So now you can hook up your laptop to the big TV in your living room, use the Xbox controller to play it, you'll be utilizing your gaming PC in another room, and it'll look better on your TV than even the Xbox One. And if you're a glutton for pain, you can play Dark Souls 2 on a MacBook Air in your living room. So that's Steam streaming in a nutshell, and back to the studio.
Well, that's actually, you know, that's really good performance. That's much better than I thought you'd be able to get.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I'm using a MacBook Air that doesn't have crazy graphical specs, but it can play, you know, high-definition video. And so that's why I recommend you don't want to just try and find the most basic piece of hardware that you have in your house. But if you have something a little bit more modern or maybe an old net laptop that is playable with HD video, you can use that, set it up in your living room, and then you can play games not on your central PC.
That's actually how I see this. I don't see this as find the jankiest piece of garbage you've got lying around your den and turn it into a gaming machine. I'm seeing it as, well, I've got a nice Ultrabook, which obviously I'm not going to be playing high frame rate gaming on, but if it's decent enough, if it's comfortable for me to use, I can make it a game machine leveraging the equipment I already have on my network.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's just like, it's so cool to be able to play on a Mac laptop games that it's like, this game's never going to come out for Mac. But now I can. The only thing is, when I first heard about this project, I was hoping that I could make like a low powered Raspberry Pi for this project, but it doesn't work with ARM. Yeah. It's only x86 processors.
That could change, though.
That could change.
They just
future.
Have to recompile the code for ARM, which, again, it's going to take a while. And, you know, honestly, I don't know how good of an experience you get off of a Raspberry Pi. I know a Raspberry Pi can receive high-definition video just fine. Yeah. But what has me worried is this. One of the issues about this sort of gaming has always been the lag. That's really what killed OnLive, right?
Yes, because you're giving the input, it's going out, and then it's coming back. But I was playing on it. I was sitting in my bedroom with my laptop, and I was playing Titanfall. And that's a first-person shooter. And I wasn't getting any lag, input lag. I don't know. They've worked some Steam magic.
Right. Well, actually, that's one of the things where if you're on the home network, there should be very little latency.
Right.
I mean, you're living on the same wire as the other machine. It's not like you're going across the internet. One of the issues I would be worried about, though, is if you're using a wireless device, you'd have to make sure that your wireless network is set up properly. I know you didn't have any issues.
No.
But if you were in a really RF crowded area with a lot of interference, you could possibly run into those infuriating situations where you're doing some heavy FPS gaming and it lags for just a frame, but it's enough to get you killed.
Right. And yeah, that's one of the last cons, is that it's only on your home network.
Okay.
So you can, I can't play games here at work from my PC at home, but...
Although I'm sure that's going to be hacked, because you know, think about it. All you'd have to do is set up a VPN so that you're back into your home network, and then to the Steam system, it looks like you're in the network.
I'm sure Padre could figure out a way to
actually
do that.
That's not a bad know-how. We should... Okay, so we're going to come back. We're going to show you how to get remote gaming using a VPN back into your Steam network.
Yeah, and someone in the chat room asks, like, well, did your MacBook Air get very hot? I'm just like, no. Not at all. I did barely use any battery life either, because it was just accepting the video.
Yeah, it's not doing anything.
My PC in my room was doing all the work. And that's one of the cons, though, is the PC that you're using to stream the games, you're not going to be able to use it while you're doing it. Like,
which
it's basically remote desktop, but for games.
Yeah, yeah. See, with RDP, though, with remote desktop, you can have multiple sessions and still use the desktop.
Yeah.
This is going to lock out the desktop. You can't do anything while it's streaming, which I could... see a bunch of reasons why they did that.
And it's still in beta, so I did have a couple of crashes, and there was a couple times where I had to get up and walk into the room where my PC was and reboot it and start the game over and stuff. But for the majority, it was super smooth and it was cool.
Yeah, super smooth and cool. Hey, speaking of super smooth and cool, you know what else is really super smooth and cool?
A slick bit of software called Squarespace.
Yeah, Squarespace. Now, if you haven't heard about Squarespace, you're a bad person and you should probably turn off the stream right now.
Feel bad.
No, I'm just kidding. We love you all and we want you to know about Squarespace. Squarespace is the space that you should go to if you're thinking about starting up a high-quality blog or a website. You see, when you create a website today, there's a lot of places that offer things that are good. You got one site that has really good hosting. You have one site that has really good design. You have another site that takes care of the back end, like e-commerce. But trying to get one site that does everything, so you only get one bill, you only have to deal with one set of hassles, well, that's the specialty of Squarespace. Now, if you have ever use Squarespace, you know how good it is. It's a great way to get a blog or website up and running immediately without worrying about downtime, without worrying about a lot of little details you have to take care of. It's a great way to share a weekend project blog or provide the ability to jumpstart a side startup project with a professional, and I mean professional, looking site, and the ability to quickly and easily take orders and sell creations. Some of the reasons why you'll love Squarespace is that they're constantly improving their platform. They are not willing to sit back on their laurels. They're always giving you new features, new designs, and better support. Now, they're also really flexible. For DIYers, this is important because you don't want to be stuck in their templates, and they don't demand you stay in them. There are a set of tools to create your own website without code, from design tools like Layout Engine to the Logo Creator, a platform for customizing those sites, especially if you do know enough code to get under the hood. And since the developer platform is super robust, you'll always be able to expand as your skills grow. Squarespace also offers beautiful designs. They have 25 beautiful templates for you to start with, and they recently added a Logo Creator tool, which is a basic tool for individuals and small businesses with limited resources to create a simple identity for themselves. Squarespace is also easy to use. It's easy to use, but if you want some help, Squarespace has live chat and email support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Plus, there's a completely redesigned customer help site for easier access to self-help articles and video workshops. They also offer you e-commerce, like I said, which is great for nonprofits, for cash weddings, registries, and for school fund drives. And it's inexpensive. It starts at just $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. One of the things I really enjoy about Squarespace is that they're mobile ready. They're not one of these sites that will look bad on a phone or a tablet because it's been formatted for just a PC or a desktop. It will dynamically resize and reformat your content so it looks as good on a phone as it does on someone with a high-definition PC. Now, even their code is beautiful. And you may know that I'm also the host of Coding 101. Well, Squarespace looks just as good on the inside as it does on the outside. They take just as much pride in their back-end code as they do in those 25 beautiful designs up front. Again, hosting is included, so you won't have to worry about multiple bills from multiple companies. Squarespace is your one-stop shop. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to start your 2-week free trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code KNOWHOW to get 10% off and to show your support for KNOWHOW. We thank Squarespace for their support of KNOWHOW. A better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website.
You want to know what my favorite part is about my Squarespace site?
What?
Checking how many people have subscribed.
That's it. Right?
Looking at the numbers, it's like, new subscribers. It's like, I should probably keep updating it then.
Yeah. You know what the worst part about that is, though?
What's that?
Like saying, you have 30 new subscribers and you haven't updated your site in like 4 months.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I mean, I'm nowhere near that number.
Sorry about that, folks. But, that's my bad. Okay, now. A while back, I decided I wanted to start up a project. We were getting really into the Raspberry Pi, so I thought, hey, you know what I want to do? I want to make an auto-stabilizing platform.
Sure, why not? That shouldn't be too difficult.
Right. So all you need is some sort of solid-state gyro, something that tells you if you're tipping this way, that way, two axes, right?
That's
all you need. So I got that. I got a shield that plugged into the Raspberry Pi. I got this case so I could build my project inside this case and then build a mount on it for the cameras.
Very cool.
I even got myself a display shield so that I could see what was going on inside of inside of the Raspberry Pi as I was playing with it. Mm-hmm. Now, again, a very, very versatile computer. It just used the GPIO in order to get that information in.
Right.
And then it drove a set of 2 servos that as it tipped this way, the servo would push it back. Or if you tipped this way, the servo would push it back. And the idea was those servers would be installed right below the case, so the case would always be level no matter what I did with it.
Right. So if it tipped a little bit, it would tell it adjust this much to get back to level, right?
Right.
Okay.
Really simple, right?
Sure.
I almost burned down my house.
Probably not the first time that's happened.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to know how.
Okay. So I think there was a voltage mismatch somewhere. I think my code was wrong, because what it ended up doing, when I tipped this way, it would tip it even more. And I couldn't figure it out because the code looked right. And I was going over it going, what's this? And so at some point, I flipped the servo. I'm like, maybe I just have this. And it did the same thing. So I'm like, I'm totally.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's weird.
And yeah, it started a small fire.
Okay. All right.
So I.
Do you typically have a fire extinguisher near you when you start projects? Because you might want to invest in that.
It was down the hall.
Oh, it was down the hall.
It was down the hall. Yeah, that was not good. The worst part about it is I live at a school in San Francisco, and the fire department is 2 blocks down. And every time the school fire alarm comes over, they respond, it's $1,500.
Oh, wow. I thought that you were going to say they had your name on file or something. Like, what do you do this time?
So as the smoke is coming up, I'm like, I throw it out the window, and I'm like waving. I'm like, don't go off. Don't go off. Don't go. It didn't go off, but I mean, I was thinking, how am I going to pay $1,500?
There goes your pork bun budget for the month.
Exactly. And who would suffer?
Me.
Exactly. So this didn't work. Which is fine. Failure is always an option. Sometimes we just need to have a fresh look.
It's about the attempt.
It's about the attempt.
I like the idea, but the execution needed a little work.
Execution sucked. But let me tell you, at NAB 2014, I saw a couple of attempts whose execution was awesome. Mm-hmm. Let's take a look. Every year, everyone who's even remotely connected to content production comes to one place, the mecca of all things video and audio. Ladies and gentlemen, NAB 2014, Las Vegas. We're here at DJI, and I'm sitting next to Paul, Paul, you're holding the Ronin. What is this?
Yeah, this is our all-new 3-axis camera stabilization system, and it has these kind of modes. Like, you have this smooth track mode where it's going to translate your movement, your pan, you have your pitch. We also have, we have, besides this standard underslung control mode, we have another mode where you can bring it down like this, and then this will allow you to get closer to your body. Most times, if you're underslung, you're always shooting at your chest or stomach level. You do this, and then you suddenly are at eye level. All of this is all automatically controlled through our complex algorithms and 32-bit processors. This gimbal system is made for the It's more consumer friendly, meaning, you know, price comes down.
You have the ability to change, what is it, the deadlock or the dead band? So you can either have the camera locked in on a particular object, no matter where you move it, or you could have it slowly follow it. So again, you get those buttery smooth pans.
Yeah, that's true. The dead band can be adjusted based off the app. It's all adjusted through the Bluetooth app. And then you can also control the speed at which your movement translates. We call that smooth track. So as you pan, you'll see that it smoothly moves over instead of a sudden jerk, which will translate to a very jerky video. Besides the app, we also have a secondary operator remote control system. So if, say, you know, one person's holding this, or if you attach this to a jib, you have remote control capability of the system.
Right, brass tacks. We know that the system is going to run for 4 hours on a charge. But and I know this is a prototype, so you can't tell me things like how much it weighs. Well, I know it supports, was it 15 or 16 pounds?
16 pounds.
Okay, so 16 pounds of support. What's the price availability? Because I know there's a lot of filmmakers out there who are going to want this as soon as possible. Where will they be able to get it? When will they be able to get it? How much do you think it's going to cost?
We're not announcing the official MSRP, but we're going to come in at under $5,000. It will be released quarter two, which we're in, sometime this quarter.
Here's the situation. You're an amateur content creator, and you want those buttery, smooth shots that you would get with a rail or some sort of gyro-stabilized platform, but you don't have the $5,000 or $10,000 you would need to buy one. Well, thankfully, we've got Big Balance. Here at Big Balance, they're giving everyone the ability to have those gyro-stabilized shot for a fraction of the cost. Now, the idea is simple. Take a handle and put the electronics into it so I can go 360 degrees around this way, 45 degrees forward and back, and give me the little switches so that I can tilt the camera exactly where I need. Now, the cool thing about this is they design products for every type of camera, every type of shooter, everything from the Gazelle, which will give you your camera phone shots, all the way up to the Mustang, which will give you sort of the action camera shots, to the Husky, which will give you these larger single shot cameras, and then ultimately to the Gorilla and the Brown Bear, which will give you your DSLR support. Now, here's the thing you're going to love. Pricing. You may say, oh, it's going to start at $800, it's going to start at $1,000. No, it starts at $220 for the Gazelle, going all the way up to $2,800 for the Brown Bear. So you choose the level of support you need and the amount of capabilities you want built into your unit. Now, if you are looking at a steady shot, if you are looking for a way to have your camera phone, your action camera, or your DSLR on that nice, buttery, smooth track, go ahead and check out Big Balance.
I'm telling you, those Big Balance ones, I really, really like those.
That's the one I want, because immediately I thought, GoPro. I'll use it for my GoPro.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the DJI one is nice, but it's designed for, like, red cameras. I mean,
That's a little beyond be able to spend on something.
Exactly. But, you know, starting down at 200, absolutely. Why not get one of those? I did a practice shot. I put one of the GoPro cameras, and I hung it upside down, and I, like, ran it along the floor.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's so smooth. It looks like a rail shot.
Yeah, I mean, you could see in the video when you were moving around stuff. Like, for that size of camera, that would be awesome. Awesome.
Very cool. And as a bonus, nothing caught on fire when I was using those.
Which is unusual.
For me.
Actually, yeah. So that was a plus.
Wow.
I'm surprised you get to go to NAB at all.
I do. Don't tell Lisa.
But yeah, oh man, those... the bigger one, it's like, I need the camera equipment before I could even buy that.
Right. Well, yeah, if I had a $40,000 red camera, then a $5,000 for a mount, that sounds totally normal.
Oh, yeah.
But if I'm filming with my camera phone or a GoPro or even like a small camcorder, that's going to be out of my price range.
Majority of the stuff I do is what I can carry with me. Can carry a GoPro in my pocket and have that or something.
So, Big Balance, we've reached out to you.
Yeah,
and if you're watching
that?
This video, could we get like...
Are those available now? Can you get those?
Yeah,
because the other one was like a prototype.
Can we get some? All right, let's move on. We've got actually a bit of feedback. Remember how we told you we were going to break the feedback out of those big feedback episodes?
That's right.
We've got one that was a holdover from Dan Simon. He wanted our help in building his PC. Mm-hmm. Now, his build, he actually gave us a link that showed us the store that he was going to buy it from. It included an Intel i5. It was a 3.4 gigahertz CPU, a Corsair liquid CPU cooler. So it was one of those little heat pumps, an Asus motherboard, a Corsair 16 gigabyte 8x2 module of memory, Kingston SSD, KC300 SSD, a Western Digital Black hard drive, and an EVGA GTX 780.
That's a pretty good setup.
Yeah, about $1,500. It's a solid setup. There are a few things
I'd change around.
Let's talk about this.
All right.
So he went with an Intel i5 3.4 gigahertz, I'm assuming so that he could free up some of the money to get that EVGA GTX 780 Ti. That is a fantastic card. It is a wonderful card. The problem is it's a $700 card.
That's the majority of his budget, right?
That's half, like, of his budget 50% goes to that. Which is, it's not bad. If you don't know the 780, it's basically two 770s glued together.
Thing is badass.
Badass, but again, you're paying a lot. And here's the thing: we've been playing with a 770. This thing right here, this PC has a 770.
This is silky smooth.
It is silky smooth on anything. The only thing the 780 gives you above the 770 at the moment, I know it eventually there'll be games to tax it, is if you're going to do multi-screen gaming, the 780 is much better at that, because again, it's got way more pipelines, it's got way more shaders.
Makes sense.
It makes sense. If you don't have a multiple monitor setup for gaming, and I'm not saying that you have multiple monitors, because everyone has multiple monitors.
Because you could have two monitors and just use one for gaming.
Exactly.
But you're talking about having like an array of monitors that all have the game on it.
And even the 770 could do dual monitor gaming just fine. You're going to get maximum resolution on most games. But if you were going to do, say, triple monitor, then you would absolutely need the 780. If you're not doing that, then what I would suggest is you drop the 780, go with a 770. You're going to save yourself somewhere between $200 and $250 doing that.
Then you can drop that towards
the CPU. Because he took an i5.
And i5s are good.
i5s are good,
they're powerful,
right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I would always take an i7, because an i7 is better at video editing. Now, that's for me.
Right. He might not be video editing.
He may not be video editing.
But I also imagine it's like if you are doing like a multi-screen thing, you'd probably want to do the i7 with the 780.
Right. Right. And I mean, look, dropping the 780 and going with the 770 is going to get you between $200 and $250 back, right? Mm-hmm. Going from an i5, he had what, a 4670 to an i7 4790, you're only going to be increasing the price by about $85.
Yeah.
Okay? So why not do that? And then the other thing that I would suggest is, why not use that saving to bump up your SSD? Either get something from the Samsung A40 Evo line, the 512, actually I think it's 480 gigabyte, which would double the space of the SSD, or get two of the Kingston KC300s so that you could have the operating system drive and then like the gaming drive. Because you ran into that problem with this, right?
I did. So if you play a game like Titanfall, it's 50 gigs. And you run out of space quick when 50 gigs is taken up. So you really got to decide which games are important to you, or, have a backup drive for stuff.
Yeah. Now, he went ahead and got a Western Digital Black, a rotating drive, so that he could have extra space.
Right.
But what I would say, and actually this is the way I set up my computers, I do have a rotating drive. It is a Western Digital Black because I like speed. Mm-hmm. But if I'm, say, doing video editing, I have a second SSD, a 256 gigabyte or 240 gigabyte SSD in there, which is my video editing drive. All my assets go on there. You could just as easily use that for all your games.
Yeah, it wouldn't be too bad. Yeah. But you were saying you recommend maybe the Samsung? I thought, was there one that you had an issue with?
Yeah, so I'm having problems with the 830s.
The 830s.
I bought four 830s, 18 months ago? And the last one is on, it's dying now.
It's dying now.
Yeah.
So it's not like it was a fluke.
I think there's something with the 830 line.
Because I know people kind of give you a bad time about supporting Kingston, but proved themselves worthy. So,
So this is the Enterprise drive. This is the reason why I started going with Kingston, because I've got all of these and all the servers I've ever installed, and I've never replaced one. They're really, really good. They're very, very long lived. This is the one they sent me to upgrade this machine. This is their HyperX. It's the 3K version. This thing is crazy fast. It's like 550 read and what it was, 525, 530 right. It's oh, no, 555 read, 510 right.
When it was in the, I didn't know I had turned on the PC.
Oh, that's right, because I didn't tell you that right. I had upgraded it.
So I, you know, push the button, and then I'm used to pulling out my phone, looking something up, checking my watch, and then all of a sudden the screen just, it was like, oh, Windows 8 is there. Yeah. It's like, was it already on? Maybe I should reboot real quick. Yeah. I rebooted, and it just,
I
like,
love that feeling.
Blinked off real quick, and then it came back on. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, he put the SSD, put the SSD in there. Yeah, okay.
Now, again, I have used five different manufacturers' SSDs. I've used Samsung, I've used Intel, I've used Kingston, I've used Crucial, and I've used OCZ. OCZ was a piece of crap.
Okay.
It was craptacular. I have no problem saying it on the stream. that was probably in my machine for a total of 40 minutes before I pulled it out.
Okay.
Something happened to the Crucial. I'm not sure what it was. I think it was a product issue. The Intels are actually rock solid, but I wasn't so happy with the price performance. I'm having way a lot of issues with the Samsungs. Kingston's, I have not replaced the single SSD yet. And as long as you don't buy the value line, because the value line of all the SSD lines, all the SSD manufacturers are kind of junk.
Yeah.
Buy a decent one of the line, and you'll get great performance.
Well, if you save money on your video card, you can keep the SSD and then upgrade your CPU. Because the experience I've had is that if I have a good base of a CPU and hard drive, like the GPU cycle of like upcoming cards always seems to go a little bit faster. So I usually, my setup is I buy like a $200 graphics card, and then in 2 years I buy another one.
Right.
And it blows my old graphics card out of the water.
Yeah, yeah.
But so...
That's the thing. I mean, if you wait, that 780 is, in 2 years, it's going to be a $300 card.
Right.
And...
It's the waiting. That's the hard part.
It's the waiting, but I mean,
pulling
it's
the trigger.
Not, you're not going to notice it. I mean, were you longing for the 780 when you were playing on this?
No.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, now, the one other thing is he's going with 16 gigabytes of memory. This machine we upgraded to 32 gigabytes using, again, Kingston's super crazy fast with heat spreader memory.
Yeah, you can tell by the heat sinks how cool.
Which is nice. And we've got an upcoming episode of Know How where we're going to show you exactly how much performance you gained from every upgrade. We changed video cards, we changed memory, and we changed the SSD.
Incrementally. So you could see the actual change in upgrade.
So you'll be able to decide for yourself what you want to upgrade. But for me, I'd say the first thing that always you upgrade, if you upgrade anything...
Is memory.
That's the easiest one to upgrade.
Oh, that's the easiest one, right.
SSD gives you the best price performance. The very last thing would be the video card.
Yeah.
Because it's just, that's a big expense. Okay. So... I realize, Dan, that we have answered absolutely none of your questions, but we got...
Sorry, we get sidetracked when it comes to hardware.
We like to talk about stuff like that. Oh, one last thing. He got the liquid cooler, which, again, I love liquid coolers, but here's the problem. In your setup, your CPU is not going to generate the most heat.
It's going to be your graphics card, yes.
So if you don't have a heat pump system that has some sort of heat removal device that goes onto your video card... It's not really doing a whole lot. You're lowering the temperature of the case, but if you really want to get effective, it's got to cover both the CPU and the GPU.
Yeah.
And it's got to pump it out of the case.
Those water cooler, the self-contained water coolers are pretty slick.
They're very slick.
If you're not planning on doing a lot of overclocking.
Yeah, don't do it. Yeah, I go air-cooled. The other thing is, if you've got a water-cooled system, you do have to maintain it. Because it can get nasty really, really fast.
I know someone... Who had an experience with that.
Oh.
Yeah. Alex actually was an early adopter of water cooling.
Alex, how did that go?
Parts were leaking eventually.
Yeah.
And I had like crusty blue stuff all over my case.
It looked cool when we first put it together. The maintenance.
So, Alex, I hear that water and electrical components, they really like each other.
Oh, yeah. Real good.
So take it for what it's worth. I would go with the air-cooled system unless you're willing to spend the extra to go ahead and water-cool the GPU as well.
Yep. And then go play games.
Now, folks, we're going to be adding a new segment here, something that I want to do every once in a while along with the feedback called the parting shot. The idea is that Brian and I are going to be going around the internet every once in a while and finding something that's either incredibly cool or incredibly derp.
Which there is a lot of on
the
internet.
There's a lot. Now, we're going to do a derp next time, but I thought this time we should do a cool. Now, Alex, if you could run this next video, this is one of the best optical illusions that we have seen this year. This comes to us from, I believe, Slate Magazine.
That's it.
Now, okay, so take a look at this. take a look at this. Now, it should work over the stream as well. Pick a spot. Pick a single spot on the screen and just watch it. You got your spot, Brian?
I got my spot.
Okay, so what color is that spot?
It looks teal.
Okay. Now, as it flips between horizontal and vertical, continue looking at that spot. Does it look like the color is changing?
Yeah, they are changing.
It changes shade, right?
Right.
No.
What?
It doesn't. Actually,
wait,
and I didn't believe them. So I took this GIF and I put it into Adobe Premiere and I sampled the spots. It's actually the exact, the colors aren't changing. The lines are just changing from horizontal to vertical.
Oh my God.
It's persistence of vision that makes your eyes think that you've changed shades.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that is messing with me right now.
Absolutely. So, hey, stream, if you're watching this, again, pick a spot, take a look, and if you don't believe me, go ahead and drop this into your favorite video or photo editor of choice, sample the colors, and yeah, it's the exact same color. Okay, stop. My eyes are hurting. Stop.
Oh,
wow. We got to.
Why are you look blue now?
That might actually be kind of derp.
That might have been a derp for us.
That might have been derp.
Okay, let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up. Yeah, we've done a lot of stuff here between your steam machine, between this ultimate machine, and between me almost setting fire to our house. Oh, and rocket fuel. I think it's time
was
to
that
wrap it
this
up.
Episode?
That was this. I know, right? It's what is it? 11 o'clock.
If we didn't have a repository for all that information, how would you ever remember it? But
we do. That's right. We've got our show notes. Go to twit.tv/kh. There you'll see all of our episodes. And more importantly, you'll see the show notes attached to those episodes. If you want to find out about that rocket fuel thing from the EU, there'll be a link to that. You want to find out about how I looked at those products at NAB, that segment will be there. If you want to find out where I went to play with Brian's steam machine, jump in and you'll see that as well. Also, you can email us at knowhow@twit.tv. Brian, you checked that mail, right?
Oh, not at all.
And me neither. So
it almost probably doesn't really exist.
Don't do that. Yeah. No. But what you can do is you can actually find us on our Google Plus page.
There's plenty of other ways to reach out to us. And the Google Plus page is a great place to share any projects that you may have built from watching our episodes. Or if you have a question, there are a ton of other know-it-alls in there. So you don't have to listen to us the whole time.
Please don't, because I don't.
God, my eye is twitching from that thing earlier.
Actually, I'm looking up at the lights, and now they look different colors. My brain is weird. Okay, also, you can find us on Twitter. If you're not into the Google Plus groove, you can find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. That's at PadreSJ.
And I'm at Cranky_Hippo.
And also, don't forget about RTD, the guy who blew up his computer with liquid cooling.
Actually, speaking of which, before we go, I have pictures of that night that we did some maintenance on my computer, Brian, if you want to.
It was probably longer ago than I want to remember.
Oh,
it's
a nice machine.
So there's computer opened up upside down because we needed to drain the system before we took everything apart to clean everything.
Yep.
So I'll kind of go through here.
But you see in this, he had coolers for the CPU and video cards.
And the hard drives.
And it was the hard drive ones.
I love the hair.
Yeah,
so, okay, there we go. We're draining the system. Yeah, okay, whatever. Okay, yeah, that's good. Oh, we are filming it too. Ooh, look at that camera.
Did you have neon fluid?
No, it was the whatever blue stuff that coolant came with. So there's it's okay.
Oh,
so it's drained now.
That's
you can see the crusty blue stuff over on the hard drive cooler pads.
Oh, that's not good.
So we're
do people still use that kind of system for cooling?
They do.
Okay, that's good. Oh, yeah, look at that.
Oh, okay.
So it was leaking out of the connections there and then dripping down to the bottom of the case and just making a whole mess of
stuff. Wait, was this just liquid cooling or did you actually refrigerate?
No, this is liquid.
Liquid.
It was whatever.
It piped to a fan system on top of the PC.
Yeah, it was a coolants made it, so it was a case that they made that they modified the top and put their little cooler thing on. And
so, Alex, with your experience, would you suggest that someone do water cooling?
No, it's just a pain.
There we go.
I mean, it was fun, but it was.
Do you think that's what killed one of your video cards?
No, they died later.
Yeah,
because Alex's machine was a beast when it first came out. It had dual 78.
Dual GeForce 7800s.
That does not look good.
There's
and
the
this was
after we took it apart and cleaned it.
Yeah, and this was the Pentium D, like right before they came out.
This was
the
Pentium D / Pentium 4, the Pentium Extreme. So it's technically a D, but it had hyper threading.
Right, and it was right before they announced the Core Duo.
Yeah,
stuff.
right before that.
And that was like a huge step up.
Look at all that goo, just crusty stuff.
Well, there you have it, folks. That's how you know How is a good show. RTD could be the host.
He could.
No.
What are you trying to say, Padre?
I'm thinking we should get rid of you. Or me.
If I disappear, I need you people to find me.
Okay, until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballesser.
I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know,
go do it. And then
collect. We got that one!
Yeah, that's
okay,
how
it should work.